enough of Sefer Mafteach to cheer yourself away from the bookstore downstairs and to come here to listen to some of the inside information about how one goes about and makes a Mafteach. I received a call from NPR Radio about a month ago, and they had, I guess, picked it up because of the New York Times, and they said that they wanted to interview me. So I told them I was a bit reluctant because I'd heard many articles from NPR which I felt were slanted in a manner that I was afraid that they were going to slant this story. And I kind of communicated that to the person who called me, and she protested. She says, "Oh, no, Mr. Vedder, this is a wonderful project, and we're going to, you know, really want you to feel good about it and all like that." And I said, "Well, then perhaps you'll tell me the gist of what questions are going to be asked. Can you hear me way in the back? Am I projecting my voice?" Okay. So they told me about four or five of the questions that would be asked. In truth, they only asked me one question because they only gave me 7 minutes. But I had kind of made bullet points anticipating the questions. And in truth, they're very, very good questions. So what I'll do is I'm going to sort of share with you what went on in my mind. And then I'm going to welcome your questions and feel very casual, feel very calm. As a matter of fact, if you don't mind, I'm going to take off my jacket. So the series of questions they asked me was as follows. Why did you do it? How did you do it? Why is the Talmud important? And that's it. How did you do it? In other words, very basic questions which really go to the essence of what this is all about. All right. So since I look around and I see many of you have been a Torah, so I don't have to tell you too much about the Talmud, because most of you know about the Talmud. But I won't take anything for granted, so I'll try to fill in some blanks. First of all, instead of the question being, why did you do it, I think the question should be is, why did it take so long for someone to do it? In the HaMafteach, both the English and the Hebrew, in my introduction, I spent a lot of time discovering, and then I reported it, as to why it hadn't been done before. And the reason simply was, there was a very practical reason. As you know, the Gemara, we believe, was given to Moshe Rabbeinu in Har Sinai, the oral law. And it was transmitted to Yeshua, etc., until for 10 generations, until the times of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi redacted the Mishnah. What does that mean, he redacted? Redacted means he edited. He collected all of the learning, all the teachings from the 10 generations previous, and he wrote it down. And this was a revolutionary thing, what we call Eis Lasos Lashem Hefer Teresecha. Rebbe was very bothered. So the Rambam explains, why was Rebbe the first person to write down the altar, write down the Talmud? So in the Rambam's words, he says, the Jews were being pushed from pillar to post. They were being exiled. They had to earn a living. They could no longer stay in one place. And Rebbe was afraid that the Torah would be forgotten. And therefore, what did he do? He collected all of the teachings of all of the previous authors of what we call the oral law. And he committed to writing. And he standardized one thing. He standardized the six chalakim of Talmud, known as Zman Nakat. Zman stands for Zroyim, which deals with seeds. Mem, which deals with Moed, Yom Tov. Seeds is like foodstuffs. Klayim, what brachas you make. So then you have Moed. Then you have Nun for Nezikin, torts, or Noshim is first. Okay. Noshim. See, an NPR, the guy didn't know. Anyway. So Noshim, good. Oh, and please, this is interactive. I learned from you, you may learn something from me. Then you have nezikin, which is torts, nushim, domestic issues, marriage, divorce, engagements, yavamas, etc. Then you have nezikin, which is torts. And then you have kachim, like we're learning now, chulin, and we're learning erechin now, things dealing with the base of mikdash. And taharos, you have tomei and tahar, laws of women with nida, etc. So he standardized the components of the Talmud. Big deal, very important. But he did not standardize the Daf and Amud. People learned, and he couldn't standardize the Daf and Amud. Why? Because the Gemara was expanding. After Rebbe, there were many, many more rabbis. Abaye and Rava, Shmuel. So you certainly couldn't standardize it and then expand it. So it was just being written and written and written. And as it was being taught, it was being written until the latter were after the, you have the Tanoim, you have the Amoraim, then you have what we call the Rabbanan Savaroi. This is the beginning of the 6th century, Marzutra. And whenever the Gemara says the Halacha, that is the Rabbanan Savaroi. And at that point, they canonized or they codified the Talmud. It stopped. But there was no Daf and Amud. It was probably written on papyrus or written on, you know, I don't know when they invented paper, but it was written. It was all handwritten because there were no printing machines. There was no printing press. Everything was handwritten. That's why when you read the disaster, when they burned the Talmud in public before the printing press, like in the LG of York in 1096 or whatever, we say this on Tisha B'Av, it was a disaster. You take thousands and thousands of pages and you burn it. Yes?
When you talk about the burning of the Talmud, do we have a complete Talmud given the fact that it was burned?
Yes, because they didn't burn the whole Talmud and the Talmud was scattered. So I don't doubt that they had the whole Talmud. But the point is really, as far as the Matech is concerned, you can't make an index if you don't have uniform pagination. Page 12 or page Lamed Vav. If there's no page Lamed Vav, you can't have an index. Plus, the subject matter is growing. So this stopped the Rabbanan Savaroi. So the two necessary ingredients for Mafteach was that you stop increasing the text and you print it. So one of them was taken care of by Rabbanan Savaroi. The Talmud stopped. Now you have a settled study. However, the Talmud was really learned mostly by the elite, because the Talmud has no punctuation. The Talmud has no beginning, no end. It just keeps on going, keeps on going, keeps on going. The three Bavas, I'm not even sure if they were divided exactly as we have them right now, Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra. Because every time you see references in the Gemara, references in Rashi, to the Bavas, he names it by Perek. Because, you know, when you look at Rashi, tomorrow, look at the Gemara. Rashi says, "Ayin brachas chav beis." I've got a secret for you. When Rashi wrote it, there was no chav beis. There was no pagination in Rashi's times. Some editor, and we don't know who it is. At least I don't know who it is. I try to find it somewhere. He wrote what Rashi was referring to. Maybe the Mesos Shas. We'll get to him in a few minutes. So when Rashi writes Ksubas Dav Chav Gimel, he wrote Ksubas because Ksubas was there. That's what Rebbe invented, the Nushim. But the Daf did not exist. Okay. So we're still missing one element, which is what? Which is uniform pagination, which is what I call it. So fast forward almost 1,000 years from the Rabbanan Savaroi, which was 500 and something, until the Gutenberg Press. Gutenberg Press, right. What is the Gutenberg Press? Anybody know? I'll look it up. Early 1500s, I think. 14 something? Yeah, that's in Kunabla. Yeah, let me just see. I want to get the right years over here. Okay, so what happens over here is that the Rabbanan Savaroi, they stop in the year 540 CE, approximately 4300 BC, and in 1445 comes Johannes Gutenberg. He invents the movable press in Germany. Okay. Then about 25 years later, now that you have a printing press, the first Hebrew book is published. Some say it was what? Perish Rashi. Some say it was the Aruch, which is a form of dictionary. Jastrow was basically the modern Aruch. Aruch was written by a Rishon, and Jastrow came many, many years later. But the problem with Jastrow was that he wasn't accepted most yeshivas, most Bat Midrashim, because I'm not sure that he was Orthodox. I don't know. And therefore, I think that he basically was shunted. Anyway, now here comes the beautiful thing. 13 years later, after Gutenberg, comes Sansino, the famous Sansino. And Sansino, he is the one who invented the format, the Tzura Sadaf. The Gemara in the middle in block letters. And then you have, on either side, you have Rashi and you have Tosfos. But the problem with Sansino was two things. He never finished Shas. It was an uncle and a nephew, Daniel and Joshua Sansino. And they lived in the town, city of Sansino in Italy. He never finished Shas. And he had some of the basic Masechtas. And he had no pagination. Whatever page it was. And then he stopped for some reason. This was in the year 1483. During the same century, or the same decade practically, as, no, about 20, 30, 40 years later, as a printing press. Then is the remarkable thing in 1520. 1520 is about 1,000 years after 540. 1540, yeah, almost 1,000 years. Comes along Daniel Bamberg. Daniel Bamberg was not Jewish. He's from Antwerp. And he hired a Jewish person named Levy. And he moved his printing press to Venice. Now, if you go to Antwerp today, and it's part of my research, there's a fantastic museum in Antwerp called the, how to pronounce the name, the Platinus or Platimus or something museum. This fellow was a printer, and obviously a Gentile. And the church was afraid that he was an upper curse, because there were a lot of Lutherans, you know. The Catholicism was nervous that there were other religions that were taking away their thunder. So the church forced him to print the Bible, the Catholic Bible. But what you find over there, it's the first time ever you have a Catholic Bible in English, in Latin, in Hebrew, I think in German and Arabic, if I'm not mistaken. All on one page. All on one page. It's an amazing thing. And then, as you go to the museum, you see, and it says over there, the Bamberg plates. We don't print with plates anymore. In the olden days, they had these messy plates. So you see Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, and it came from the Bamberg printing house, publishing house, and they brought it to Antwerp. So what Bamberg did was, he adopted Sansino's Tzura Sadaf, Gemara in the middle of Rashi and Tosfos. He published the whole Shas, and he is the one who created Daf Beis Omer Aleph. Why is it Daf Beis? To tell you a real secret. Because the first page is the Shar page, with a picture of the, like a gate you walk into, or like a big, like the, in the Beis Hamikdash, like the Hechel. Walk into it. That's why I kid Rabbi Zlatowitz. I say, you know, you don't have a Shar page, so why you start with Daf Beis? It should be Daf Aleph. Because for whatever reason, I don't think art school has a Shar page. They just, you know, they have the, you know, the Haskamas, the patrons, whatever, and then they go right into it. Anyway, but everybody knows you start with Daf Beis. So what happened was that Bamberg, he published the whole Shas, I believe in 16 volumes, he squeezed them together, in Venice. I went to an auction, well, actually it was a showing. The whole Jewish community in New York was here. It was the year 2009. How do I remember? Because it was right after Madoff. I remember it was because everybody's out of money. And I know they said Yeshiva University was interested in buying. There would have been a real customer for it, because this fellow, Val Medina Trust, exactly. At Sotheby's. And the one who owned it was a fellow from originally from Antwerp. He lived in London. He lived in Israel. Lunza, right. So he had this fabulous collection, and he had one of the few Bamberg sets. You can imagine. Oh. And like Meir Zlatowitz said to me, he says, you see, buildings don't last. Svarim last. Svarim are forever. Anyway, so Bamberg printed his Shas, and he paginated Daf. Beis, Beis, Gimel, Gimel, So now, for the first time, you had the two critical components. The Gemara had stopped 1,000 years earlier, and now you had the printing press, which is only, Bamberg was in 1520, so it's about 100 years, about 80 years after Gutenberg discovers the printing press, and after Sansino started, he's here for business. So he published Olshas. That uniformity was not perfect. We know in computer language what justification is. For those of you in my generation who don't know what it means that when you have a page, the margin is always exactly to the end. That's called justification. In the Amavteach, my graphic designer, God bless him, he's a tzaddik, Ben Gassner, so he says, no, it's more natural if it's not justified on this side, but you justify on this side. Okay, I leave it to the experts. So, the pages of every Amud were not justified, which means, although the first word and the last word throughout Shas were exactly alike, that means the daf was uniform. And if you said daf lamed omed beis, it would be there. But it wasn't exactly in the same place. The first and last words were the same, but if you have any old Shasim, old Vilna Shasim, I inherited one from my grandfather, it's a mess. You open up a page, open up that page, and open up one of the modern Gemaras, and you'll see that the first and last word of the page are exactly the same, but you'll see that they squeezed in a lot of words at the end so that it should fit, because it's got to be in the same moment. But there was no justification. It wasn't until the late 1886, when the widow and brothers Rum created what is called, quote, everybody knows, the Vilna Shas. What makes that special? From that point on, every word in every Gemara, if you're part of the union, every Gemara is in the exact same place. So then they had what was called the pin trick. They would, in the Mir Yeshiva, and the big yeshivas, they would take a pin and stick it through a Gemara, all right? And they would say to you, okay, tell us every single word that the pin went through. So if you know Gemara by heart, Dav Beis, it's Omar, Dav Gimel, it's Rava, Dav Dalet, it's Abaya. In other words, you could do that if in fact it was paginated. As a matter of fact, Professor Dr. Steinberg, in his Havdama here, he talks about the pin trick. He says that that could not have happened until the daf was, an Amud was not only the same first and last page, but the words were exactly there. Good. Now it's time for an index. Everything works. So then you have a different problem. Different problem is, who learned Gemara? Gemara was not so popular at that time. Gemara was a closed book. I have to tell you, we prized ourselves on the fact that although the Old Testament, Tanakh, is known by the Gentile world, sometimes, unfortunately, to a greater extent than we know it, especially Tanakh, and they became experts. You go to Yale Divinity School and there'll be experts over there. Gemara was a secret. Gemara was a closed book, a mystery. As a matter of fact, when people have said, oh, Art Scroll, you did it in English, and everybody's going to know about it, and everybody's going to see it, I am sure that when Rashi introduced his parish, people said the same thing against Rashi. Oh, Rashi, you're opening it up to everybody. The whole Hoi Polloi is going to learn Gemara. This is really should be only for the Kahan and the priesthood. It only should be for the Gaonim, the Rosh Yeshiva. You want everybody to be learning Gemara? Because that's what Rashi's parish did. You try learning Gemara without Rashi, I got news for you. A lot of what Art Scroll writes came from Rashi. When I give this shiur, the guy said, well, Rabbi Art Scroll says, he said, but it's from Rashi. Okay. Anyway, so Rashi opened up the world, the Gemara world, in Hebrew, of course. So, from Bamberg, which is the 1500s, until Rav Meir Shapiro, Zechayim Levracha, in 1923, who of course created the idea of what of the Daf Yomi, the Daf that you learn every single day. Gemara was learned by what I call an elite group of scholars. And these scholars fed off each other in a complementary way. A Talmud would learn from a Rebbe. The Rebbe obviously knew more than the Talmud. And whatever the Talmud didn't know, the Rebbe knew. Now, let me backtrack for a second. There's no such thing as a coincidence. 20 or 30 years after Bamberg publishes Shas, it's amazing. He publishes Shas from 1520 to 1548. Between 1535 and 1540, Rabbi Yeshua Boaz of Italy, the neighbors, Bamberg is publishing in Venice, and he's in Italy. He published the Masoras HaShas without a computer. What's the Masoras HaShas? It's in every single Gemara, and wherever the Gemara mentions a particular inyan, something about Pesach, about Rosh Hashanah, he then shows you where else it can be found in Shas. Fabulous. He is an index. He's an index. Except, you have to know where the first place is. In order to find the other references, you have to be learning it, or know where it is in the first place, to be able to find everywhere else. But it's not a coincidence that 5 or 10 years after Bamberg created the Shas with the uniform pagination, along comes Rabbi Boaz. He says, wonderful, it's all printed, and it's all ready for me with a Gemara in the middle, Rashi over here, Tess over here, and uniform pagination. And he was a big time Chacham, obviously. He had no computer, no Bar Ilan. So anytime the Gemara mentioned something he wrote, you can also find it here, here, and here. By the way, I must say, it's not 100% complete, but he hits on 95%. But there are times where he doesn't hit it all. And as a matter of fact, the new Gemaras now have come out where they're adding to the Masoras HaShas. Because it wasn't every single reference. So that's not a coincidence. It was the best thing he could have done. So now we go fast forward to 1923. So people are learning Gemara over the next 400 years, but they're learning in small groups, they're learning in chaburos. You don't have the major, major yeshivas. People learn, you know, cheder, then they went to work. I don't know if there were kolos in those times. I didn't do that much research. Point being, you want to know where a Gemara was, you asked. Yes, 101. If you didn't know, yes, the next guy, you went around asking. Okay. Then comes 1923 of Meir Shapiro, and the rest is all known to us. Daf Yomi is announced at the Aguda Knessia in Marienbad. Interesting story about the Chofetz Chaim. Want to hear an interesting story about that over there? Am I going too far afield? Meir Shapiro was a very young man. Chofetz Chaim was a Zaken Adar. Definitely in his 95s. Because he was Nifter soon after the between the two wars. And this was, I think, the inaugural meeting of the Knesset Gedolah of the Agudas Yisrael. And Rav Meir Shapiro had spoken to the Chofetz Chaim, so goes the story, and he told him about what he wanted to do. He wanted to introduce the Daf Yomi so that a Yid in Varsha can learn with a Yid in Galicia. They meet in the street, they have a common interest. So Rav Meir Shapiro was told by Chofetz Chaim, I want you to walk in very, very late. Chofetz Chaim says something, you listen. Good. So they're assembled over there, tens or hundreds of thousands, I do not know, I presume were hundreds. And Marienbad is probably no coincidence because all the big rabbanim used to go to the spa there. And I guess they it was a good place to get together. Because after all, if everybody's in different places, different cities, Berlin or whatever, they're far apart. They had no email. This way, it was a good place. I imagine that's why they gathered there, because they're all going there for their for their rest and recreation. The Rashivas have to rest also. The Rebbes, and the Hasidic Rebbes, whatever, Litvish Rebbes. So, everybody's assembled, the Chofetz Chaim's on the dais, you can imagine. And then, in comes Rav Meir Shapiro, the youngest of all the rabbis. Very young man, he died very young. I think he died in his 40s. Tall man, bearing beard. And when he walked in, Chofetz Chaim stood up for him. Chofetz Chaim stands up for him, everybody stood up. He wasn't even known that way, the young man. And the Rebbe is there, Ger Rebbe was there, older people, known throughout the world, throughout the Jewish world. If the Chofetz Chaim gets up for somebody, when Rav Meir Shapiro spoke, because everyone knew of the honor that bestowed upon him by the Chofetz Chaim, when he spoke, they didn't laugh him out. They didn't, laugh at him. Because, Jewish people and traditional people, they don't take a fancy to new stuff. Chodesh Rosh HaTorah, everybody knows what the Chassam Sofer says. It's a play in words. The point being is, we are very traditional. And I'll get to that in a moment about this. So, what happened was that when Rav Meir Shapiro announced it, Like my father told me, or Shom, he said to me, the Hasidim, they always have a joke, a wag, you know, the cynics. Okay. So what do you do, Rabbi Shapiro, if the Gemara finishes over here in Omar, and the next page starts with a Baya? Do we start the next day with the word Abaya, or do we combine together? The Gerev gave a bang. He said, Rosh Hashanah, we start Brachas Daf Beis. Get Rebbe? And it happens. So the Chavetz Chaim built up Rav Meir Shapiro so that what he said should become Mukubal and Merutzah to the rest of the gathering. Okay, that's a side story. Anyway, so it popularized the Daf, but again, the ones who learned it were the ones who really knew it. Then along came Art Scroll, legendary, wonderful people. And to me, the Art Scroll were like the Rashi of the generation, in the sense that they opened up the Gemara to the whole world. It's a fact, it's a truth. Together with the Baalei Tshuva movement, the movement where people were coming back to Torah, Chozrim HaTorah.
I'm wondering why you're saying Art Scroll and not Steinsaltz.
Steinsaltz started with Random House. He was their first English author. I'm talking about the English right now. Steinsaltz was not upon the Omid. He did not have Tur Sadaf. Oh, but you know something? That's like VCR and Betamax. You know, you have one chance to do something, and then if somebody comes and does it better, people aren't looking back.
But also really probably...
In time, but certainly not in style. Yeah, but by the time Steinsaltz, you see, Random House didn't know that, obviously. Okay? I'm going to tell you a funny thing. I had an article written about me in the New York Times. In comes the fellow named Mr. Berger, Joe Berger. He was a writer. He said to me, Mr. Redder, nice to meet you. Where is Matzah Kli B'Ashpa? What? Matzah Kli B'Ashpa means if someone finds a utensil in the waste, in the dump. Which is Gemara above Mitzvah. I said, oh, I see you got a background. I said, well, yeah, learned a little. So he said, you know, I'm learning. I bought the Steinsaltz above Mitzvah, and I couldn't find it. I said, of course, because it's in the second parak. This is in the first parak. That's why it's not there. It's in the Ela Mitzvah. So the answer to your question is that Steinsaltz came out with a big, big PR. Random House is, you know, it's a major publisher all over the world. But it was not the same as the regular Gemara where people had at home and they couldn't relate to it. But I'm not here to talk about Steinsaltz. He's a wonderful man. He's done wonderful work. He's published now Source of Daf. He's got the English and the Hebrew. But my experience really has been with Oscar in terms of English elucidation. Anyway, so the Chozrim HaTshuva movement, the translation of this into English of the Shas, and all of a sudden, it became very, very much in the mode, very popular to learn a daf. All the cruisers now advertise Daf Yom Yishir. Like they have Chazonim, Daf Yom Yishir also. Every hotel for Pesach, Daf Yom Yishir. It's like comes with the air conditioning. You got to have it, otherwise, you know, you're nothing. So now all of a sudden, you have the masses learning Daf Yom. And learning Gemara. And even if you're not a Daf Yominik, but if you are Chozrim HaTshuva, you have a thirst for knowledge. That's one of the reasons that you're Chozrim HaTshuva. You have a thirst for knowledge. A lot of people have tried everything else out, and they say, there's nothing in it for me. Let me find something with substance. So, a friend of mine, about 3-4 years ago, Steve, I'm not mentioning his last name, a good lawyer, a good friend of mine, he's a Baal Tshuva, and he's a lawyer, and every moment that he's in the office, he has his Daf Yomi, he has his Oscar there. And I happened to visit him on a matter. He says, Danny, where the heck is the index? I said, Steve, be patient. And when I came out with it, anyway. So, the index's time to come was an evolution. And the evolution was what? After the popularity of the Talmud. And there was a need for it. There was a need by the masses. Because the truth be told, back in the 1500s, you didn't need an index. Because the people who learned Gemara there were Talmid Chacham. Until 1500, you couldn't have one. After 1500, until Gemara became popular, which is what it is today, you didn't need one. So that really is the reason why, not as a science, but as an art, why there was no index until recently. Why did I do it? Anybody could have done it. If you decided you want to spend the time and the effort to do it. So I just felt as a lawyer that I'm so used to looking at an index when you want to find something. It's like a natural thing. And also, I teach the daf for almost 20 years, maybe more. And I remember we used to learn Gemara, and someone would say, oh, didn't we just learn something? And I'd like to, as they say in Gemara, we'd mish it back. We'd turn the page, and we couldn't find it. We just learned it. So I felt that that an index really was necessary. And my wife is in the audience here. My wife said to me, Danny, before you undertake such a revolutionary work, you know that our rabbis are very traditional. And you're writing this not for the secular world. You're writing it for the Torah world. The world of Torah. In Hebrew, English, Yiddish, but the world of Torah. In the world of Torah, they look at the Gedolim. And you need the Gedolim to approve what you're doing, not just approve the sefer you've written, but approve the concept. You know, people write a book, they write the book, and then they go around looking for a haskama, looking for an approbation. You know, a person writes a parish on the Torah, and he goes around to his local rabbi, and he goes around to a broader circle, and he gets his haskamas. Over here, we decided to first do a template, to do a skeleton mafteach. We covered all of Shas, but not as thorough as it was now. And then we went around to perhaps 12 of the greatest gedolim. The names are all in here. We get to Israel and America, Ashkenaz and Sephardic, modern and not. And we showed it to them. And each one of them, without a hesitation, said, do it and do it quickly. I said, wonderful. And they get me inviting. All my scummers here are about 4 or 5 years old. Are you a journalist?
No.
Oh, I think that's okay. So, no. So, all that scummers here are 4 or 5 years old. Why? Because it was given to me, mitten drinnen, so to speak, whilst the project was ongoing. And then, when we finished the Baruch Hashem, I brought it back to the same Rabbanim. I showed it to them. I brought it to Kanievsky, and looked at it, look. And he always has people around him, and they said to him, what's the Rebbe looking for? He says, I'm looking for the word pitsuim. Now, pitsuim in Hebrew means damages. It also means to be reimbursed. And the Gemara speaks about a bezdin that paskins the wrong way, whether there's liability to the judge. Judicial malpractice. And the Gemara speaks about it. But the word pitsuim, you're not going to find in the Gemara. Pitsuim is a modern Hebrew word. We use the word pitsuim because we want this to be, in Hebrew, we'll talk about English in a moment, user-friendly. So that's what the Gemara refers to when it says it. So he found it, he got a big smile, he was so happy, etc. Anyway, so this really is kind of the background of how this thing came into being. I want to talk to you about the English, if I may, because this was a great challenge. I tell everybody, if you can buy the Hebrew, buy the Hebrew. The Hebrew is a much, much more, what's the word I'm looking for? It's easier. If a person knows Hebrew and English, use the Hebrew. Unless you're intimidated by Hebrew. There are many people, I've got people who are learning my daf, greatest guys. Some with the Hebrew, the English. I've got one fellow, he sits with the Hebrew Gemara, with the English art school. And the English, as you know, is on the left side, the Hebrew is on the right side, or however it is. And he's always in the English side. I said, tell him privately, of course, he said, go to the Hebrew side. I could tell he's intimidated by it. You know, he didn't have the learning when he was very, very young. Didn't go up, he wasn't fortunate to have the yeshiva education from 6 until 20, you know, and he's the most wonderful fellow. So he's more comfortable. He's more comfortable with English. That's the way it is. Good. And I'm also more comfortable with English. But, you know, you learn Hebrew. So the English posed a tremendous challenge. What was the challenge? There are many, many words which have become part of our lexicon which aren't English. Shabbos, Yom Tov, Rosh Chodesh, Yiyush, Shibud Rav Nosson, Hefker. I bet you one of these words everybody here knows. The word bris. Who doesn't know what a bris is? Pidgin Aben. These are not English words. These are Aramaic and Hebrew words. So what do you do? So what we did was we created what was called, what is called, is an integrated, transliterated glossary. What does that mean? You know, many people who have to say Kaddish, unfortunately, who don't read Hebrew. So you have Sidurim, which have Yiskadal of Yiskadash, Y-I-S-G-A-D-A-O. That's a wonderful thing. That's called transliterated. Yiskadal, Y-I-S-G-A-D-A-L. Translated means, may his name be great. So we transliterated almost 3,000 Gemara words that people know for the word bris. B-R-I-S, even the New York Times writes the word bris, because it's in our lexicon. But it's not, strictly speaking, English. They say, well, why don't you just write circumcision? Because there's a bris that's also an oath. And the bris is a covenant. So Hebrew is a very rich language. So therefore, we have almost 3,000 transliterated words where we define the word in English. Take for the word yish. Yish means I despair of finding what I lost, or I've abandoned hope. I've given up hope. So what is the right word that we used to be able to look it up? Where do we find in Talmud the law of Yush? If you lose something, has no simon, who does it belong to? You know, find his keepers, lose his weepers. I once said that, my Rebbe gave me a patch, the end of the Gemara. But the point is, where do you find it? So we transliterated the word Yush, Y-I-U-S-H. We integrated it under the letter Y, not as a glossary. Under the letter Y, we wrote Yush. We define it, we call it despair. We say, look at page, we have the page written down, 422, 200, despair. And then we have a list of the word despair, despair of losing an eved, despair of losing an animal, despair of losing money. You know, it's all the different categories of yish are in English. Now, you can imagine in Hebrew is easy. You look at, you write that yish, more than yish, and you just write all the case of yish. In English, you're busy trying to make it user-friendly so that a person who's not familiar enough to learn it in Hebrew, right, but knows the word Yush is a very popular word because he's heard it so many times, you can look it up. And think about bris. Bris mila. And bris ben absar. Bris mila means a circumcision. Bris ben absar was the covenant between Abraham and God. Between the piece of the bird that was split in half. So we have bris ben absarim, see, oath of the covenant. Bris mila, see, circumcision. One's the letter C, one's the letter O. And we see where it is. So this was obviously the challenge of the English. And there are many, many examples. I think I'm through. If you have any questions, please ask. And since you're so few here, I hope to give each of you an opportunity. And let me hear your name. I told you my name. And I appreciate very much you spending your time with me. And we'll go up here. Thank you. We'll go up. We'll go from up. First row. Doctor.
My name is Nissan Hershkowitz.
Doctor Hershkowitz. Yes, old friend from Jerusalem and here. Yes.
I marvel at how, well, of course, the meanings of the word, but I just noticed now that the English and Hebrew seem to be about the same size.
No, 300 pages bigger. Oh. But we have Bible. I became a publisher. So this is called Bible paper. Bible paper. The idea is to have a lot of some technical things. The idea was to have it all in one volume. Nobody wants to buy two volumes. A to Z, great. Alf Tov, great. Because there are 3,000 more words, it's going to be thicker. This is 550, 820. But they look pretty much the same size. Now, you don't want to get such thin paper. There's a new sitter that came out recently. The paper's so thin that you can see on both sides. And it detracts from the learning. So over here, this is known as Bible paper, which is a rich paper, but you really can't see the other side unless you're really looking for it. This over here was a different stock. It's a lighter paper because we only have 500 pages. And we didn't want to be too heavy, didn't want to be too bulky. And that's to answer your question, is it's not the same amount, 300 pages more. Exactly. So you get your money's worth. 777 pages, and the thing is 520. Okay, next. Going on. Yes, what's your name, please? You have a question? We'll catch you later if you don't have a question. Yes, what's your name?
Gadi.
Gadi what?
Capella.
Capella. Yes, Gadi Capella.
So I'm looking at the Hebrew.
You bought it?
Yeah,
I'll sign it for you. Okay. Whoever buys it, Absolutely.
And I'm looking at the, so it really is most of it in Hebrew. What did you do?
What, the English is mostly in Hebrew?
The what?
You said the English is mostly in Hebrew? Say that again.
I didn't mean to say English, I meant to say Hebrew. And the,
Hebrew.
But what did you do with the Aramaic words? I mean, there's some Aramaic.
Oh, there are. In the Hebrew one?
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, I see a few, but really most of it is.
No. Well, you know, we classified it by topic. The topic called tuck for coin. If a coin grabs something, he grabs truma or whatever the case happens to be, maisa behema, whatever happens to be. Okay? Not maisa behema, but he grabs something. Tuck for coin. So, that is a Hebrew word. Tukvo is a Hebrew word. To take, to grab. Correct. So, most of the topics in Shas are known by the Hebrew names. Sure, the language of the Gemara is Aramaic, the language of the Mishnah is Hebrew, but most of the popular concepts and topics are known by the Hebrew. Yeah, but because, you know, the Aramaic words you find mostly in Agadata. Mostly in Agadata. Most of the Talmud is really in Hebrew. You got it, but we refer to that as well. So you have both. Yes, sir. What's your name?
Moshe Strauch.
Hey, Moshe. Dr. Strauch, right?
Basically, you just found the word of the Talmud, just put it in, and or just concepts or phrases or words, or how does it work?
We started off with topics. We have altogether about 6,500 topics, what I call main entries. Shabbos is a topic. Yom Kippur is a topic. Once you have the topic, you have the subtopics. So that flowed naturally. In other words, in Hebrew it's called arachim, entries. So once you have the topics of Shabbos, then it was a matter of being able to organize and compile how you want to break it down. So if you look, the way we have it, it's all alphabetical in classification. So for Shabbos, for example, look at Shabbos over here. Shabbos is on page Shinbeis, Shabbos. That's a big one, let me tell you. Shabbos, Shinbeis Tov. What page? 443? What page? 445. We have Shabbos. So look at Shabbos. No, I'm sorry. 444. 444, we have Shabbos. So now, we start off, because it's alphabetical, we start with Agada, stories about Shabbos. Then we talk about Isurim, remember Aleph. Prohibitions of Shabbos. Then Maisim, also stories. Mitzvos. Then Karbonos. Shabbosos. And then we have a sub-entry called Shabbos Malachos. Then we broke the Malachos to Malachos of Achila, Malachos of Beged, of clothing, Malachos of Bone, building, Malachos of Balechayim, animals. So once we had agreed on the entries, the sub-entries just flowed from the subject topic. And that's what takes 7 years to put it together.
You did it as we learned that you were doing it like that?
You know, I wish I could say yes. That would be really a story into itself. Can you imagine? What a discipline. You teach Daf Yomi every day, granted. Well, actually, one day a week I'm off Sunday. And then what do? At the end of the day, you write down everything you thought about. You know, life is not that organized. Sometimes you have to dash out and you're tired at night. So it was in spurts. And I borrowed many, many topics from many, many different people. I had different Rabbonim, Rabbi Mordechai Willig, Shlita, my Mar Dasra, he helped me by speaking to his Talmidim, and he has Talmidim from all sorts, all levels, and he asked them, let me ask some Minyanim. Didn't tell them why, because this was a hush-hush project for 7 years, no one knew about it except for four or five people. And he came to me with in Yonam, at somebody in Lake would do it, different yeshivas. So I was able to assemble topics and topics and topics and topics and topics. And then I have a wonderful editor in Eretz Yisrael. We sat down together, both by email, by telephone. I was there many times, a lot of time. And we tried to break it down and compile it so that it would have a organization. So to answer your question is, it was through many, many different sources. Yes, sir. You want to ask me something? What's your name, sir?
My name is Ted Meyer.
Hey, Ted. Hi, Ted.
I want to ask you a question. It's really about something that I'm looking for that I haven't found in the index.
I'd like to hear that. What's that? Okay, it's a good question.
Well, can I give you a little back?
No, no, please
do. Somebody once said that if a more than same kaddish is sufficient to say one kaddish a day, satisfy the rule, the obligation. So I went down to the Jewish division of the 42nd Street Library. I asked the librarian, she couldn't help me. Then I called up the chief of the division. He said, I'm not going to answer that question because it's illegal.
Have to ask the rabbi.
So the question is, can you tell me where is there such a Talmudic or halakhic statement that would...
Did you look it up on the Kaddish here? Okay. Remember, this is not the Shulchan Aruch. This is a Gemara.
Right.
We have a thing here for Kaddish. And if it doesn't say that you can say Kaddish once, it doesn't refer to that Gemara, I dare say it's not found in the Gemara. So the answer to your question is, I've never heard of that halakha. I'm not saying it's not so. You're best off asking your local Orthodox rabbi who will be able to show you. It probably came in a tshuva where a person said, I'm in a kind of situation where I can only say it once because I'm traveling, I'm flying, it's too dark, it's too light, whatever reason it is. And some rough paskin that that's okay.
Because I know somebody told me that the Broya Synagogue up in...
Washington Heights.
They said people take turns saying...
Well, they have only one person saying and everyone says Amen. This is a ready minhag. You're not going to find something tomorrow. Yes, sir. Anybody above?
My name.
Your name? If you have a question, sure. What's your name?
Adam Goldberg.
Aaron Goldberg. Hi, Aaron. Adam. You want to ask me something? Or just want to tell me your name?
You want to know.
Okay. Another question. Good.
Please sign my
hand. Of course I will. Of course I will. So, any questions you have? So, I think... Yes, sir.
Why was it something that the New York Times was interested in?
How did it catch the attention of the New York Times? If something has happened once in 1,500 years, they figure maybe newsworthy. And that's why the lead headline was, after 1,500 years. Well, you know, anything that happens once in 1,500 years, I guess it rates a page. What I was very grateful was that it was done in such a nice way. Such a nice way. That's it.
Right.
And that's it. Okay, two. Yeah.
I don't want to make a speech.
No, it's all
right. But the point of the question is that in today's world where serious Talmudic study, unfortunately, is viewed by many as the province of full-time scholars, a notion that I also, of course, disagree with, how... In the sense of Ketzah, not Eich, but in the sense of Ketzah, how did you find the time as a full-time attorney to manage this tremendous project?
Through the generosity of my wife allowing me to be driven. That's how. I was driven to do it. And Ein Dover Omed Keneged HaRotzon. Nothing stands before a person's will. And at last, Siyata Shemaya. The real answer is God blessed me to give me the time that I needed and the energy that I needed to do it. I mean, I consider myself blessed by God that He gave me the opportunity to do this. Yes, that's it.
It's possible two questions.
Yeah.
Do you envision Haftarah as a work that will be expanded, or do you envision it as a work that's mostly finalized?
I felt originally that this would be a game of gotcha. Gotcha means, oh, you made a mistake, we gotcha. So I was open enough in my introduction to say, and as a matter of fact, it was in the Times article, if you have any comments or you notice any errors, send me an email. So far, I have found more than anybody else, as I'm going through it. We've received no errors, but good ideas. Three or four cross references that I didn't have. So the answer is, we are going to assemble a group of improvements, and at one time we're going to do it. So the answer is yes, but I think it'll be very, very subtle because the Gemara is no longer expanding, and we haven't yet gotten a barrage of complaints saying you missed this, you missed this, you missed this. My greatest fear was you missed something, or you missed something important, and Baruch Hashem, I haven't got that yet. So the answer is it will be improved, but I think not as much as one would. As one thinks it would need. Yes, sir.
Same question.
Yeah.
So the same question. In a world where so much is becoming digitized and there's Bari Lan, do you view yourself licensing the content in Hamaftah to say Bari Lan, where someone could digitally like click on the reference to Yesh Lomi Das in your index and take them to the page in Bari Lan or some sort of system like that?
I'm not mentioning anybody, any other companies, Bari Lan or others. The answer is, we're giving it very serious consideration. Very serious consideration to putting this in a different medium. Avi.
It won't help the Shabbos and Yom Tov. We have to use the...
That's why we're with this right now. My son Avi, Dr. Avi Ritter. Yes.
Do you eventually see this as being part of regular Shas, like in the back of Gemara's?
That's a great question. Great question, Avi. There are altogether 5 Shas manufacturers in the world. Serious manufacturers. I've spoken to all but one. And all of them have agreed that they're going to agree, all of them agreed, that they will insert in the back of their Gemaras my Hamafteach. I'm going to let you into a secret. These are 2 volumes. There are 2 other volumes that exist, but they're not for sale, more or less. The other 2 volumes is this over here by Masechta, and this over here by Tractate. It already exists. So basically, you could slice into 63 pieces, put brachas behind brachas, Shabbos behind Shabbos, Pesachim behind Pesachim. You can do it all. That is what we're doing. And in Mietz Hashem, we hope very soon, but soon is relative, after 1,500 years, if another year or two, it's okay. We're hoping to have a uniform Hamafteach. And so far, all of the Shas manufacturers have agreed in principle not to create their own, but basically to take this Hamafteach, because I said if you have more than one Hamafteach, it's not good. You want to be uniform. You can have different gemaras with different stuff. I mean, with the same stuff in different material. And they've all agreed to this. Last 2, and then I go.
How much help is the Sansino index doing this?
Nothing at all.
I noticed that on like PL forms of verbs, like you move, it has a unit in it. I'm wondering if you didn't put a redirect without a unit.
I didn't do the what?
Like on a verb that had a PL form. Limud, Talmud redirects to
PL, plural?
PL.
Oh, PL, yeah, Limud,
I'm wondering why you didn't have a form without
you
redirecting to that.
I'm not a Baal Dikduk. You sound like you are. So I relied on a Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael named Rabbi Yochanan Kohn, who's a Baal Dikduk, and Hebrew is his natural tongue. And I really yielded to him on these finer points. I'm not enough of an expert. I'm very far from being even knowledgeable in Dikduk. And if you find that as a complaint, email it to me, and we'll. If this is a valid complaint or valid criticism or suggestion, we'll incorporate it into the new edition. Thank you very much for your time. Good night. Sarah, you'll remove these books over here, or should I take them downstairs?
When they originally made the Tzur Sadaf, back in 1500, whatever it was, was that sort of random, like the ends here, or just...
Yes, it was random.